Marilyn Kring Productions in association with Emergent Life Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 8, delivered on September 12th.
Today, ratio analysis. Continuing the work from the last lecture, we will analyze the ratios for what they mean. But first, a look at the screens. Sir, good day or bad day on the street so far?
Good day.
It's a good day. Is it an awesome OMG day?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's better than nothing, and it is above the 0.33% mark on all of the major indices. So you do have a good day, and that is being propelled by some good news overnight. The good news seems to make the market pop and get everyone all happy again, even as we drift farther and closer and closer toward the cliff of a crash and a subsequent recession. Looking at it, talk to me. Has this been a smooth, madam? Has this been a smooth from the beginning or not? Walk me through the morning then. Start at the beginning. There, if you look very closely, there was a slight rally off the bell. The bulls came out, and then what happened? Talk to me. Say, start with early in the morning. Go ahead. It dropped rapidly. Say it in bull and bear terms.
The bears
what? Took control of the market and pushed the index down, the indices down. And then from there, at about 9 a.m., sir, what happened?
The bulls
what? The bulls didn't, what? They did a proctological exam? No.
Say,
the bulls brought it back up. You know, don't give hand signs. That's what we do on the floor. And that's complicated. So we had the bulls rallied. The bulls rallied. And then in the 10... From about 10 until 11, you see that there were two bull spikes that kept that laid in a support on the rally. But then, ma'am, at about 10:30 or so, what happened?
The bears took over.
And did what? And again, no, what? They turned the bulls into ground beef. Yes, you say it. They took control of the rally, and they brought stock prices back down again. Was it a quiet drop, or was it a significant drop?
Significant.
Yeah, it was a steep. It wasn't a smooth. It was, Wile E. Coyote going off the cliff. Paw. And then from there, they had a couple of more pushes down. You saw that there was actually an effort by the bulls to rally on the drop. You see that spike of volume? They rallied on the drop, and then there was just nothing. And then all of a sudden, the bears got tired for a while. They just went and hibernated or found a picnic basket with, you remember Yogi Bear? Yogi Bear, smarter than the average bear. And Boo Boo, gee, Yogi, Mr. Ranger's going to get us. What do you guys listen to? Pikachu? Ma'am, then we got it about 11 o'clock. Tell me what happened.
It just kind of stayed.
It didn't kind of. At about 11 o'clock, what happened? There was something significant. There was a strong bull rally. Do you see it there at about the 11 o'clock mark, a little before 11? there was a really strong push by the Bulls. It wasn't, there was a small spike involved, but that was just the Bears staying away, and the Bulls were able to have their good times again. And they have pretty much were dominating right up to the point where we get to maybe just before the lunch hour, and then there was a slack off. The Bears put some pressure on the market, and now we're probably going to have a drift during the lunch hour. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But you're probably going to see a drift. And if there's no more good news today, that might mean that the Bears will quietly come back in and push the market back down. More good news, and that's going to get the Bulls all happy, and they're going to give another surge upward. For my portfolio's sake, of course, I always hope for the Bulls to win, notwithstanding how short-lived this kind of action is going to be. But you do see that this has been a volatile morning. It's not a quiet up and down, one of those mornings when it's just like a nice little choppy sea. This was hard action back and forth. But as you can also see, we're at the midpoint of the day, and we have less than a third of the volume of a full day. So by the end of the day, unless there's a lot of trading activity in the afternoon, this is actually going to be a slow, quiet day as far as the volume of trading goes. I mean, right now we've got less than a billion shares have been traded in the morning. By the way, notice that number. I'm talking that it's not very impressive when you've got less than a billion shares trading in 3 or 4 hours. That gives you an idea of how significant your little trades, my little trades, would be to this vast ocean of turbulence that is a typical developed country's stock market. This is huge in terms of absolute numbers. So keep that in mind when you imagine that your trades or my trades are significant at all to the markets in general. And your opinions and my opinions don't matter at all to anyone but us. And maybe my cats, they'll listen to me sometimes. But always keep that in mind. Now, returning to what I was doing the last time, and I encouraged you to bring your laptops or your notebooks with you for this session, because you're going to have a chance to do some work on ratios. And to begin this, very quickly here, bring up VeggieNet, because I put up a formulas sheet in your resources tab. Resources, that right there. This is by no means is this all of the ratios. And very briefly, I'm going to show you a place on the web that you have where you have access to Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage, and they can give you more ratios than you could ever want to use. You have to choose a set of ratios for your own purposes. We all have our favorites. This is sort of like the core set, along with a few additions in it that I've done, that I've given you for my purposes. But this is like the core. But beyond this, for example, and sooner or later I'm going to remember to put some bookmarks in for this kind of stuff, but within I'm going to show you, and I've shown you this before, but I want you to write it down here, and I will put a link and resources as well. In our ISU system, my.illinoisstate.edu, and like I said, I'm going to have to walk my way toward it because I don't have the wherewithal to bookmark these. The Milner Library is our repository of information products of all kinds. Now, information products would include books. They would include magazine articles. They would include database services. And if I can do this right, you should have been shown this at some point when you took Business 100 here. But I've been told by some, no, we didn't see this. Or we just kind of passed over it and they didn't really know what it, talk too much about it. S&P Global Net Advantage. If you were to pay for this, it would cost you a fortune. Let me turn down a few lights here so you can see this better. If you were to pay for this, it would cost you a lot of money. This is a subscription service. It's free to you as students, and some of these resources will be available to you as alumni of ISU. But this one, I mean, anyone in the business I consider to be serious is going to subscribe to the S&P Global Net Advantage. I, happily, as a faculty member, get to have it, along with all of these other really incredible resources, one of which is Lexis, what used to be called LexisNexis, the database of all news articles and legal cases. I mean, pretty much anything you could imagine. The whole trick with LexisNexis is knowing how to ask questions. In technical terms, knowing how to query the database. And that still requires that you understand a little bit about Boolean logic, ands, ors, except, and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, S&P Global Net Advantage. And here we are. Just a wonderful, wonderful thing. It doesn't look like much. You've got some nice commentary, some news, and stuff like that on the front end. But then as you step into it, and this is like stepping into a swirling ocean, you've got to step carefully or you're just going to get completely blown away by what's there. Companies. Company search. Okay, I want to get a company search. Let me do NFLX, Netflix. And you are going to get a sidebar with more information than you can imagine. And this is one of the problems of our age now. We're in a world where there's so much information. The question is, can I get this information? It's how do I sort out what is important from what I don't want for the time being? That's why you have to keep your focus narrow at first and then slowly expand outward from that narrow focus. It was sort of like what they taught us in the military, how to, over a period of time, get your head to be on a 360-degree swivel. But anyway, now, as you see, oh, well, right up here at the top, Netflix ratios. And I mean, you've got so many ratios, it's just ridiculous. Fortunately for you, even in my highest level classes, I wouldn't do all of these ratios. I would do a subset. And then I would encourage people to find their own favorites among the ratios. But look at this. Just an ocean, and you'll get these for anything. So you're saying to yourself, okay, fat boy, why are we doing these in Excel by hand when we can go here? Well, it helps to know what these ratios, how they're put together, what the formula is, so that you can have a meaningful understanding of what it means and what its weaknesses are in a lot of cases. But as you can see, Netflix has a return on assets, which we talked about on Tuesday, of 4%, a return on capital of 11. That's one I don't cover, but an ROE of 16.27%. Oops, I'm looking backwards. I hate it. Can I do this? Oh, latest. I want the latest on the left. That just irritates me. Okay, go. There. Okay, normally these days, best practices is, it's S&P seems to default to the other way, but the most recent is on the left, and then they go back in time from there. And you'll see that in my quizzes, tests. You'll see that probably in the textbook as well. From left to right is most recent to past. And as you can see, Netflix has an ROA of 4.4%, which we did last in the last class. We did the ROE of, and it was 21.7%. Now, the return on common equity would be different if Netflix were to have preferred stock, because the equity would have a higher value if you took common stock plus preferred stock. But if there's no preferred stock in a company, then ROE is the same as return to common, okay, ROC. And then all through it, just their gross margin. This takes, okay, how much of the companies are, as a percentage of revenues, how much are they spending on selling, general, and administrative expenses as a percentage? That's one I don't do. But it is kind of interesting because you can see that Netflix, well, for a few years has been fairly, well, they had more expenses, selling, general, and administrative expenses last year. And then the most recent, I can't keep my eye. They've brought it down somewhat. Somewhat. But they are definitely, they seem to have blown more money. And that would probably, okay, no, I'm talking too much. Madam, why did Netflix's selling, general, and administrative expenses go up as a percentage of revenue in the past couple of years? What would you speculate? You look at me like, I got nothing. Anything? Well, that wouldn't have anything to do with their selling, general, and administrative. Those are costs. Prices, I love to bring my prices up. I hate to bring my costs up. You got anything? The answer is spending more, for God's sake. As a percentage of revenues, they're spending more. You got anything, sir? Anything? Yeah. My guess would be it's marketing. They're spending more. SG&A includes all of those operating expenses that aren't wholesale expense costs. My guess would be that they're pushing in on the marketing more heavily. Quite possibly that would have to do with their attempts to penetrate India, the South Asian market. That would cost a fortune. A continent that's a subcontinent they are trying to penetrate. You're not going to get that done with $5 holler ads. You're going to have to spend a lot, especially when you have entrenched companies there already. You have the Bollywood, and then you have the streaming services that are already in place there. As a matter of fact, just on a personal note, I'm betting against Netflix and one of those companies in India to be able to control the market. And so we'll see if I'm right or wrong. But they're going to spend as much as they need to try to get into that market. Moving down. Okay, this EBIT margin? EBIT is another term for operating income. So in other words, EBIT margin is the same thing as operating margin, what I showed you for Netflix. Again, EBIT is another term for operating income or operating profit. And so when I see EBIT margin, that's what I'm showing you in my nice little formula sheet here. That's operating margin. It's just your earnings before interest and taxes, your EBIT, over your sales. In other words, how much did they have? And then we're going to go through the numbers on an Excel spreadsheet. But this is convenient for you to see this right now. Beginning, and notice, I don't actually, the numbers, yeah, I want you to calculate them. But what matters in finance is saying, what does this mean? Because the numbers have no meaning whatsoever unless someone says, okay, this means. But in this case, if I looked at the operating margin, you can see that they have actually, and the term that we would probably use, they have firmed up. They have strengthened their operating margin. It's gotten better. In other words, cost controls are in place. Now, here's one that I don't show, but it actually, I've almost been thinking of bringing this one in because I hear this one used by finance people in corporations, EBITDA. There's no way to say that as a word. EBIT, I can say EBIT. But EBITDA, what would that be? EBITDA? I don't know. You add back depreciation and amortization because they weren't really expenses anyway. So it's sort of like looking at it more from a cash flow perspective. It's not a great cash flow perspective, but it adds back in some things that are obviously not depleting money on the way to the operating income. So EBITDA margin is you just take EBIT and then you add back depreciation and amortization for the period and then divide that by sales. And if you look at that, EBITDA margin has been firming up nicely. It's firming up. Yeah, it seems like the depreciation and amortization are not impacting the company all that much. Now, here it is, the net margin. In other words, this is the one that I showed you the last time, net margin. You just take your net income divided by your sales. In other words, how many pennies out of every dollar that the shareholder gets to claim came from a dollar of sales. So in this case, we see that the net margin, let's see if I can highlight that one. You notice that net margin from 2015 to 2000, well, I'm not even highlighting it right, am I? Net margin, right here. You see that at least since 2015, they have been firming their net margin. In other words, the amount of money that survived to the bottom line per dollar of revenue was getting better. It's slipping right now a little bit. Perhaps of some concern because 7.7% down to 6.5% is a little bit of a drop. But nevertheless, from a historical perspective, Netflix is able to bring more of every dollar from the cash register down to the shareholders. Now, remember that this company doesn't pay a dividend. Netflix doesn't pay a dividend. So all of that money that makes it down to the bottom line for the shareholders is getting plowed back into the company. None of it's going to the shareholders as dividends. Okay. Asset turnover. How many times per year does Netflix turn over in sales its total asset base? You notice that that has been stable. At about 7/10 of the inventory of the assets, of all the assets of Netflix, are rolled over each year. So in other words, about every year and 3 months maybe, Netflix turns over its entire total asset base in terms of value through its revenue. That's not bad. Now, fixed asset turnover, I don't show you that one. Accounts receivable turnover. Why wouldn't Netflix, I'll bet it doesn't have any accounts receivable. Well, that's true. You're right. You're a finance major, right? Darn, so much for bringing home the bacon. Okay, see, I knew that, and I just wanted to see if the accountant had anything in her. Okay, yeah, there is no accounts receivable for this company. Now, for a long time, my company didn't have any accounts receivable. And then I found out that by having accounts receivable, I could boost my sales. Because someone couldn't afford something, they'd walk out of my exhibit. Now they can, oh, I'll finance that, or I'll finance part of that, I get the sale. Then it's a matter of collecting the money, which I do through PayPal. Okay, now, inventory turnover. How many times a year do they flip their inventory? They are not counting that content as inventory. So they're saying that's not applicable either, which is really annoying. Okay, here's the liquidities. See this one right here? That's the one I call the burn ratio. It's in your list, and I showed it. Cash over account liabilities. Now, the current ratio is just current assets divided by current liabilities, what I showed you. The quick ratio is current assets minus inventory. It should be identical because they're saying they don't have any inventory, which is, excuse me, that's interesting that they're being allowed to pull that stunt with the SEC, because clearly those movies and all that content, that's inventory. And I was counting it as such when I was doing their quick ratio. And that's where how they're getting by with it. They're saying they don't have ownership.
Except I don't know how they can do that for now that they're releasing like Netflix only. How do they get away with that?
Because that would be theirs.
Would be theirs.
See, there's the idea. They're saying this is an inventory because we do not have ownership of it. The argument against that would be, but you do have care, custody, and control of the content, which is de facto ownership. But now, with their own series, their own movies, some of which are great, some of which really, really suck, but that's just me. Interestingly, they're saying they have no burn ratio. Oh, NM, not measured. Not measured. Okay. Anyway, moving down here, debt. The debt to equity ratio. Long-term debt, wow. Hello, kitty. Long-term debt to equity is 221.8%. That is where they are playing gains to leverage. That's where they, and as I promised, I will show you how gains to leverage works here in just a few minutes. But I want to go through these. This is a wonderful teaching tool. All you have to do is just put into Excel the formulas yourself, and then be a little cautious. If you're not exactly the same, your number isn't exactly the same as what you're seeing here in the S&P Global, it might be because they're doing a calculation slightly differently from how you would do it. If it's a massive difference, well, you're wrong. Because even if Standard & Poor's is wrong, they're right because they're bigger than us. Okay. I wanted to get down here. Growth rates of revenue. Growth rates, in other words, just what I showed you. The end over the beginning minus 1 gives you your percent, times 100 gives you your percent change. That's what they're doing here. Their growth rate of revenues has been pretty strong. Notice since 2015, their revenues have been growing quite nicely. Interestingly, here's the one that we're concerned about. The growth rate of revenues, at least for the time being, have slowed. They're still growing, which is wonderful, but the growth is slowing. Now, let's try something here. And I'll ask this of someone I've not bothered in a while. Ma'am, why would you speculate? You're like, oh, God, fat boy's bothering me now, and he has bad breath. Okay, ma'am, why is the growth rate of revenue slowing? Speculate. Competition. Competition is beginning to bite them. Look at, very good. You know, you were looking miserable, you know. Here you come through with a good one. Competition, I mean, you've got all these others, and one 8,000-pound gorilla is now in the mix. Who is that?
Hulu.
Oh, no, Hulu. Yo, well, I mean, they do have some content, but it's kind of lame, but there's a bigger one. Yes. Mouse ears, see? Yeah, I should have hinted that at you, and you would probably thought, no, it's just him being weird again. Okay, Disney is in the loop now, but they're still not all that strong yet. They're just getting started. So I wouldn't say that this is them, although the competition is there. Hulu is a competitor. Amazon is a competitor. Amazon Videos, Amazon Prime is a competitor. And then there's another thing, too, the ultimate scary. Saturation of markets. I mean, there's only so many people on planet Earth. And unless you're going to start getting subscriptions from aliens on Alpha Centauri, actually Proxima Centauri has the planet going around, you're going to hit a wall sooner or later. And the only way from there to grow would be through jacking up your prices, which Netflix does all the time. To the point where the problem, though, is that once competition begins to enter, price increases, you can no longer use those to just keep growing forever because you're no longer a monopolist. That's the power of competition. When we talk about free markets, that's just meaningless. What really matters is competitive markets. That's what forces efficiencies. That's what forces innovation. Netflix is suddenly realizing, well, we've got to stop just jacking up our prices and selling to new suckers around the world and get down to the business of actually offering something that the others don't and not keep charging more and more because we're just Netflix and we can do that to you. That's a significant thing. So we're seeing the transition of a company from essentially an oligopolist to more of a monopolistic competitor, which is a healthy thing for us, and in the long run, it's going to be healthy for Netflix. These are the meaningful things that we can see looking at ratios. Again, the numbers, you notice, let's see how we calculated that 27%, 0.0%. You can get Excel or your calculator to do that. The real question is, what does it mean? And what does that mean for investment in Netflix? If they are going to face increasing competition, they're no longer going to be able to grow their revenues through just jacking up their prices and finding new subscribers in a world of people just desperate to watch Netflix and chill. Although Netflix and chill sounds a lot better than Disney and chill. But anyway, and then you've got these growth rates right here. These are actually the numbers growing. These are actually the numbers growing over time. Now, this is interesting. Let me take you, that, keep this, and like I said, I will give you the link so that you can go in and look at any company you would want to. As long as it's a public company, you can break it down and do your own analysis. You don't have to listen to the morons who are talking heads on TV. Now, there are some, mostly they're not on the networks, but you do find that there are some who do have inside information or they have insights that are broader than yours or even mine. And then I can begin to look at them. For example, and I'll just give you a great example. I had been looking at going long GameStop, GME. I knew it was risky to do it because they're kind of in the back end of the innovations. They don't do the streaming, gaming, and all that kind of stuff. But they did show, I know they were coming out with the new boxes and all that, so I thought maybe this is a good play. I saw a couple of letters that were written by one of the big investors to the board of directors and the upper management of GameStop, telling them, stop trying to survive. It's time for us to die and for you to spend the cash off over the next 10 years to the shareholders, because they have about $1 billion in cash. The key was that no one in the board of directors directly contradicted what that shareholder said. It seems like they were in agreement, and notwithstanding the young hot shots who are at the executive level, the new ones, who are saying, we're going to go forward and win, well, the board of directors will decide that. And it looks like the board, at least some of the board members, are agreeing with the big shareholder. So I did not do GameStop, and I'm very glad I didn't, because it is now showing that I would have lost money in that one. Look at the numbers, read the inside stories if you can get to them, and do not listen to a lot of the people. Like, for example, this moron Cramer, he starts getting political yesterday. We don't get political. Yeah, you had a question? It probably, okay, there are two possible reasons. One is because it was questionable, the numbers, 1 year. Another is that you can get glitches in data streams. I will tell you, interestingly enough, for a while, I was grabbing financial statements off yahoo.com, where you can click on financials, and they get them directly from the SEC. It was a cheap way to quickly grab the financials. And then I realized this was the stupidest thing I'd ever done, because I got down, and it was showing that one company after another didn't have any interest expense. And it finally occurred to me, I know darn well this company is leveraged like hell. Of course they'd have an interest expense. And it was just that there was a glitch in the software at Yahoo Finance that wasn't pulling the interest expense number off those Edgar sheets that I show you. It was just not pulling it. And that could be what's going on here, is that there is just something that happened at the time that number was calculated that left it out. Always keep that in mind. Check if you see an NA. First of all, it's probably truly an NA, but if it doesn't seem like it should be, well, then you go in and you have a look at the numbers themselves on the SEC site to see if there really was a number there. As, for example, cash to current liabilities is most definitely, let me pull something up here. No, I didn't want to do that. Financial report, NFLX. The ratios, yeah, there's a burn. There's a burn ratio. That's what they're calling cash to total liabilities. So definitely these numbers do exist. And times interest earned, which is there somewhere in those ratios. See, that's one of the problems, though. This is such a frickin' ocean of data. How do you find the ones that you want? The Excel spreadsheet that I did was a cheapo version of the real deal. But it's enough to give you the idea of how things go. Now, interestingly, though, I calculated inventory from what they call content. And they say they have no inventory. And so Standard & Poor's takes their word for it instead of what I would consider to be inventory, even if you claim it's not inventory. And then quickly running back up here. And I'm going to do just a few more very quickly. Financial analysis formulas. Times interest earned. Now, these are the asset activity ratios. Now, Standard & Poor's global net advantage would say sales over inventory for Netflix is not applicable because Netflix doesn't have inventory. And why doesn't it have inventory? Because Netflix says it doesn't have inventory, even though that stuff that they call current content is most definitely inventory. It's taking up space on their servers. It is making that it is an opportunity cost in terms of the decision making about when and how to bring content in and when and how to exit the content from the playlist, all of that. But real quick, let me show you something. I do want to show you one. SEC.gov, and I'm not going to do a whole financial analysis on this one. Filings company. Let me take AMZN. I'm going to show you something. Get their 10K. Now, inventory turnover ratio. If you look at the sheet, inventory turnover is sales over inventory. Now, if I were to say, okay, I'm going to pull up a quick calculator here. Well, I didn't need to do that. Calculator. Hello, calculator. Now, let me take this up here. Oh, mother's work is never done. Okay. Now, that would be sales over inventory. So if I were to look at their statement of operations, their total sales are 232,887. 232,887. Divided by, now I've got to go to the balance sheet and look at inventory, 17,174. Holy Jehoshaphat. 13.5 times every year, they completely rotate their inventory. They blow it out that many times every year. So in other words, in less than a month, in terms of value, they have turned their inventory across all of these vast warehouses into revenue. That is just amazing. That's staggering. And even at that, they have to have these huge warehouses. Take on the other hand, I'm going to pull another one up here. And backing off. Filings. Let me take Ford. Well, Ford, really, Ford Melba. Who the hell is Ford Melba? Does anyone know what the trading symbol of Ford is, for heaven's sakes? It's not F. It's FD. That's right, FD. FD. Let's take theirs. No match, really. Finance. Ford. F. It is F. Okay. Teach me. F. Okay, watch the financials. Let me get the 10K up here. And I'm going to take sales divided by inventory for Ford. Sales, 160, 338, 160, 338, divided by their balance sheet inventory, 11,220, less. They turn over their inventory of cars, well, actually more, I should say, about once every 3 weeks at Ford. That's not bad. And then you can go down the list from there to companies like Target. And you'll see, in the case of retailers, TGT, showing you one more just to get you the idea of why this one's a very nice ratio to look at. 10K. Come on. Financial statements, statement of operations, 75,356, 75,356 divided by their inventory, their balance sheet. Come on. There's some reason I can't, statement of position, balance sheet, 9,497 divided by 9,497. Target turns over its inventory 8 times a year. In other words, about a month, every month and a half, Target turns over its inventory. That is not unusual for brick and mortar retailers. They will be turning, they'll try to turn over inventory as fast as they can. But you see, with a brick and mortar retailer, you've got to put a lot of stuff on the shelves, because that's why people come into your store, is so that they have a variety and a choice. That means that you might not sell more than 1 of every 10 items on your shelves ever. So that's one of the curses of being a retailer these days. And a brick and mortar retailer has to face this reality. It's just a pain in the ass. Now, one last thing before I go to the quiz, because I almost forgot to give you that today, is to return here very quickly. This is actually all this DuPont is saying to you, is that net income over total assets, in other words, your return on assets, your ROA, is nothing but your net margin times your sales over total assets. Your total asset turnover. So in other words, return on assets is net margin times total asset turnover. So you can actually, if you have two of them, you can calculate the third. More importantly, if you've got a net income over total assets, in other words, your net margin, you can find out, and it's weak, it doesn't look good, you could actually find out which of these was causing the trouble and more finely retool your management to say, all right, net income over total assets, our net margin kind of sucks, our return on assets isn't very good. Well, is that because our net margins are weak, or is that because our total asset turnover is weak? Interestingly enough, it is oftentimes the total asset turnover that is hurting your return on assets. And actually, then your return on equity is hurt too. So that's all that's doing, is just showing you that you can break down some of these ratios into two other ratios to see what's the real cause of a problem. Anyway, enough of that. I'm going to bring up your quiz. I'm going to ask the teaching associate. But once you're finished with the quiz, that's all I will have for you. I thank you.